Hi folks, Galen Clavio here. Welcome to another Hoops HD preview video cast. We're very excited to be joining you once again. If you missed it earlier this week, we previewed the Pac-12 and Big Ten conferences in anticipation for this 2013-2014 season. We're going to change the format up a little bit. Instead of comboing multiple conferences into one video cast, we're actually going to do three separate video casts on this Saturday, and we're looking forward to it. We're going to be tackling, first off here today, the Big 12 Conference, an interesting conference for a lot of reasons, and we'll talk about those here as we move along. We've got some of our regular panelists joining us. We hope to have some more joining us either through the course of this video cast or in the next two that we do this afternoon. First off, joining us from across town, it's Hank Glassner. Hank, how you doing today?
Wonderful.
Doing well. Not a lot of good college football on early in the morning, but it's probably a good time to start talking some college basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does seem like we're kind of a little bit in the doldrums of the college football season, and it's a good time for that because we've got college basketball starting up in several different locations across the country as exhibition games are starting to get played. David Griggs back and joining us once again. David, how are things with you?
Great. There actually is a college basketball game on tonight. BYU is playing somebody that doesn't matter in a game that doesn't matter. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think it matters.
Oh, okay. So, but at least, like, it's college basketball that doesn't matter, but at least it's college basketball.
Correct. And it's really a good place to be as far as all of this is concerned. I'm excited about what we've got coming up here so far, or in the early portion of the season. There's a lot of things, frankly, that we don't know about college basketball coming up this year, and now we finally start to get some answers, and that is definitely something worth looking at and trying to explore. So, folks, if you're out there watching, you can leave comments on the YouTube page that we're currently broadcasting on. Those comments should be feeding to us directly. You can also tweet us at any of the Twitter feeds that we've got listed on our lower thirds. You can probably tweet me. That's probably the easiest way to get a comment in. It's at Dr. GC. We'd love to hear from you.
Don't tweet me. I don't know how to use it.
You also don't have any hands, David.
No, I mean, it's hard for me to respond.
It's hard to respond on Twitter with a dorsal fin. But anyway, so let's start talking about the Big 12. Of course, this Big 12, it does not have 12 teams, and that's the same case as last year. However, at least some relative stability. Nobody left this conference over the course of the offseason, so that's an advancement over what happened to them going into last year. But, this has almost always historically been the playground of the Kansas Jayhawks, and that in large part has been due to just a consistent high level of quality that they've gotten out of their talent, combined with quite a bit of experience. Last year's team, very experienced. The year before, also very experienced. This year's a little bit different for this Kansas squad. And while we've seen them picked first overall in most of the preseason polls, you're not talking about a situation here where this is a fait accompli, that Kansas is just going to walk in to this conference this season and waltz away with the title. A lot of young players, very good young players, but still very young players overall. And it's going to be interesting to see how Bill Self and this Kansas coaching staff are able to harness that talent and kind of bring it to bear during the course of the season. Hank, let me start with you. You know, when you look at this Kansas team, they're picked first in the conference, as I mentioned, by most people. They're ranked sixth nationally. Do you think that they're actually that good coming into this season, at least the sixth nationally part?
Yes. Yeah, I actually do. I think that one of the most underrated aspects at Kansas is not only their ability to recruit, but their ability to instill confidence in their freshmen. That's a testament to Bill Self and the coaching staff. I don't think there'll be any sort of a lackluster transition period between years past and this year with the new experience and old experience, because you got Andrew Wiggins, you've got Wayne Selden, and you got Joel Embiid, a pure 7-footer who could play back to the basket and will be a defensive force because he's 7-footer. And in college basketball, those come at a hugely premium supply. So I think this Kansas team is definitively, actually, the favorite in the Big 12, even with an Oklahoma State team and what people want to call the leader for the Big 12, or not only the Big 12 Player of the Year, but the leader for the National Player of the Year, Marcus Smart.
I'm going to show you a video clip, and I'll be honest, mostly I'm doing this because I want to see if the screen share function works, but we're going to show a little Andrew Wiggins here that we've seen already this season as he practiced again in front of Kansas fans for the first time. That looked pretty good to me.
That looked good. I'm more impressed that the video works than like what was actually in the video.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's nice to see that we can actually get technology working on occasion. So obviously, you know, Andrew Wiggins, David, this is a guy that a lot of people thought was going to Kentucky, and kind of similar to the Shabazz Muhammad thing last year, only in that he didn't go to Kentucky, although going to Kansas probably a little more understandable than going to UCLA. A lot of people have been comparing him to the next LeBron James. It doesn't seem like he's quite at that level yet, and it might take him quite a while to get there. But the amount of talent that Kansas has been able to bring in this freshman class is really quite extraordinary.
It definitely is, and it's just, I mean, generally when you look at a team and how good you think you're going to be, you look at how they did last year, how they finished, and what they have coming back. But with Kansas, it's almost the exception of the rule, Kentucky, too. I mean, they have so much new young talent. It's such a strong class that – but I don't know. I guess if they win the conference, it certainly wouldn't surprise me, because the way the Big 12 works for Kansas is they win the league in a mediocre year for them, and in a bad year for them, they tie for first place. And I'm thinking this might be a bad year for Kansas. They might only tie for first place in the Big 12 this year.
Well, they did that last year, and a lot of people have forgotten this, and it's easy to do because Bruce Weber's involved. But they didn't win the conference outright last year. They end up tying with Kansas State. And even with that sort of a season, it was actually a pretty good year for this Kansas squad. They had that one swoon in the middle of the Big 12 conference schedule where they lost a couple of road games that everybody was shocked about. The TCU game is still might be the most shocking game that's happened so far this decade. But they bounced back really well, and you know they put themselves in a position where they could have won the conference outright on the last day of the season, but they ended up losing to Baylor. You know, last year's Kansas team, as we've seen historically with Kansas teams, was just dominating defensively and much better than average on the offensive end. And that's a trend that I'll be curious to see if it continues, because I think a lot of their defensive prowess, Hank, has really come from having those older players in the lineup. It's hard as a high school player, even a really highly regarded high school player, to make that defensive transition into college basketball. And I think that's probably the main thing to be watching out for with this Kansas squad this year.
Sure, but one thing that you know consistently about Kansas teams is that they don't really care about the early season in terms of wins and losses, because when March comes, they are fully prepared, and you know that every year, whether they're a one seed, whether they tie for first or gain the Big 12 championship. I don't think they care. They just care about March in general. Also, I think the one question they have that needs to be answered by March is, what are they going to get out of their point guard play? Is Nadir Tharp going to take over the reins? Because we saw flashes of that last year, but not to the point where we could definitively say, okay, Tharp is the answer. So I need that question answered before I can definitively say that Kansas is a prohibitive favorite, not only in the Big 12, but in the national title picture.
Yeah, and a lot of the guys, again, it's just a matter of who's going to be able to mesh properly, you know, and it's not just whether Tharp's going to be able to play effectively, but, you know, they're trying to integrate Tariq Black, who transferred from Memphis. They've got Wayne Selden, as you mentioned, who's almost a forgotten top 15 recruit.
He's so good.
And he's a very good player. Joel Emblett is another one who's very raw. I think he's Senegalese. He's got a lot of talent at his disposal. It's whether he can actually transfer that into doing something good on the floor. You know, David, I think it's interesting. You know, here we are in 2013, and we're talking about Kansas being able to integrate all these pieces, and everybody seems to think, yeah, they're going to be able to do that no problem because their coaching's so good. Has there been a coach on the national scene who has had their the way that they're portrayed changed so greatly over the last 5 or 6 years than Bill Self. I mean, this is a guy we used to point to and kind of laugh at and say, well, you know, great recruiter can't really handle the big games or can't really handle a lot of the things that go along with coaching. And he's, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years really turned into one of the top 4 or 5 coaches in the nation, I would say.
Rick Barnes might be the inverse of that a little bit. Once upon a time, people thought he was great, and now they think he's a joke.
It's like face-off in the Big 12. You know,
yes.
I guess that makes the Rick Barnes John Travolta or something like that.
Yes.
Anyway, I'm curious to see, though, how Bill Self handles this particular challenge. Now, their primary foe, I guess you could say, in terms of their overall chances of winning the Big 12 conference, really a lot of that, I think, is going to be coming down to Oklahoma State and Baylor. Let's talk about Oklahoma State first. This is a team that a lot of people early on in the season last year looked at and said, you know, this team could absolutely challenge for the Big 12 title. You know, they lost a few games that were questionable in the non-conference portion of the season last year, but they beat North Carolina State, which seemed like a much bigger win than it actually was at the time, given the way that they played. They had a really tough home loss to Gonzaga, but overall they really looked like they were going to be a force to be reckoned with in the conference. They ended up losing 3 of their first 5 games, and then they lost a couple of heartbreakers, one of them being a double overtime game at home versus Kansas that pretty much sealed the deal as far as the conference championship was concerned. But this is a very talented Oklahoma State squad, as Hank mentioned earlier on, and I think everybody was pretty surprised that Marcus Smart decided he was going to come back for another season in Stillwater, but that's exactly what he did. And, you know, even though this is a guy whose offensive rating really wasn't that great, he still, you know, he put up a crap load of shots last year. He played a tremendous amount of minutes. He was very effective as far as forcing turnovers. He's got a lot of really core talents that I think are going to be very useful for this Oklahoma State squad. And they've got some other talent on this roster as well, David.
Yeah, they do. I love this team. But, yeah, I mean, obviously with the return of Marcus Smart, this is a proven team. And I realize Kansas is very talented with all these recruits, but there is a little bit of a question mark. How is it going to match? You just mentioned it is going to be kind of a challenge for Bill Self and, you know, as much as he's revered, I mean, I think we all can't help but scratch our heads a little bit with Bill Self. But this Oklahoma State team is a good team. It's a proven team. I mean, I think that – I don't know if I'm ready to give them the label of one seed yet, but I think they're going to be way, way up there when we look at them in March. I mean, they could win the league. They really could. This is a very good team. Stillwater is back. I mean, it's – it ebbs and flows, but when that team is rocking, that arena is one of the hardest places to win, and I think they're back.
Hank, what are your thoughts on this squad going into the season?
I'm glad that you said that when Stillwater's rocking, it's one of the hardest arenas to play in, because when Allen Fieldhouse is rocking, it is the hardest arena to play in. Yeah. So there's that as well. Also,
well, yeah, but that's kind
I
of like
say,
saying Florida's
as much as I love Oklahoma.
I mean, that's not news.
Anyway, go on, please.
I know that Kansas has a lot of questions in terms of will their freshman mesh, to which I think is less of an issue than you do, because I don't question Bill Self's ability to do that. The question I have with Oklahoma State is, A, I'm still not sold on Travis Ford as a coach. I've seen him make some very, very lackluster decisions mentally down stretches, late stretches of games that kind of caused me some concern going into not only the end of last year, but the beginning of this season. And B, can LeBrian Nash understand that he's not the alpha dog on the offensive end on the floor? Because they have so much offensive talent that's not named LeBrian Nash, and I don't know if LeBrian Nash understands that, because sometimes his shot selection is that of Kobe Bryant, and we're not playing in the NBA. So I want to see if this Oklahoma State team gets better as a team and not just because it's one more year with the same players.
I think let me tackle both of those issues. First, you've got Travis Ford, who I think, you know, last year, made a lot of people forget about the previous two seasons when this Oklahoma State program really wasn't very good. They missed the NCAA tournament 2 years in a row, including in 2011 when they managed to go 20-14 and still missed the NCAA tournament, which is kind of a remarkable feat in this day and age. But they did that primarily because they went 6-10 in the conference.
Yeah, you got to give them credit. It's not easy to go 20-14 in the Big 12 and miss the NCAA tournament.
I don't question his ability to recruit. I don't question his ability to get players playing on the same page. I question his decision-making down late stretches of games.
Right. Well, and I do think it's interesting. If you look at the trends for this team, they really – it's obvious to me that Travis Ford is a guy, when he feels like he's got talent, he tries to up the tempo and, you know, he really kind of starts to shift the offense in a direction that's aimed more at getting buckets near the basket. And, you know, you look at last year, they were in the top 100 in tempo. 2 years prior, they were in the bottom 100 in tempo or very close to it. So that's a huge switch. And I'll give him some credit for adapting, but I don't. Let's put it this way: the jury is still out on whether he can really take a team full of talented players like he's got with this Oklahoma State squad this year and turn them into a night in, night out group of players that can be competitive. And you know, I think you make a good point on LeBryan Nash. You know, I also think that it's important though for Marcus Smart to figure out better ways to utilize his shot. I mean, he only had an effective field goal percentage of 45.5 last year, which for a guy that's taking the majority of your shots on offense, that's not very good. Now, LeBryan Nash was not a whole lot better, and frankly, Markell Brown's effective field goal percentage, not terribly good either. So even though this team hit a decent number of shots last year from two, they really need to get better from outside. They need to add that to their arsenal. And you know, I really think that helps to cover up a lot of the sins that they might have had in other areas of their game. I also think last year it's important to understand this was not a terribly experienced team last year. They were among the youngest teams out there. So, you know, you expect maybe, you know, what they did in the postseason happening to a young team. They lost to Kansas State in the Big 12 tournament. They lost to Oregon pretty handily in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Those things I'm not expecting to see this year. I think this Oklahoma State squad's got a lot of learning that they've done over the offseason, and hopefully for them they'll be able to actually put it into practice when it comes to what they're doing on the court this year. Looking at the third team that's a contender for the Big 12 title, we've got Baylor. Now, this is a Baylor squad that you want to talk about a regular head-scratcher, always a very, very talented team. You know, you have Isaiah Austin on the team last year at center who steps right in and plays regular minutes. You know, you've got Corey Jefferson who also played a key factor throughout most of the course of the season last year. Now, granted, he was a junior last year, but one of the most efficient players in the country. And yet this was a Baylor team that really fell apart down the stretch. At one point they were 5-1. In the Big 12, they ended up finishing 9-9 in conference, but one of those wins was an 81-58 win over Kansas. They crash out in the first round of the Big 12 tournament. Then they turn around and they win the NIT pretty handily. They beat Iowa by 20 points in the championship game. It really seems like it's always feast or famine with this Baylor program. And, you know, you get a lot of talent, Hank, and then you end up with disappointing tournament performances or just baffling losses in the regular season. Is this a Scott Drew situation, or is this just kind of a larger issue with the way that the overall program's constructed?
I think it's both, but you kind of took the words right out of my head, or right out of my text that I wrote last night when researching on Baylor and how they've just vastly underperformed. In 2010-2011 season, they were picked fourth in the preseason coaches poll. They finished eighth. In 2011-2012, they finished fourth, predicted third, and they went to the Elite Eight, but let's not remember they only beat a 14-11-10 seed to get there.
Hey,
so it's not like they had a rough path to get there. And then last season they were picked second in the preseason poll, supposed to be their best year yet, most talent available, and they finished sixth and won the NIT, which to me, I don't know. It's nothing more than a thank you note for playing the season. So I don't know. I just think sometimes you get classic cases where there are coaches who can recruit their asses off to the best of their ability, top level every single year, and yet somehow doesn't apply the same recruiting principles that he does to his coaching principles. So I think it's a classic case of being a great recruiter and not being that good of a coach. So I think Scott Drew has to shoulder a lot of the blame here. And as soon as he could prove that he could take the talent that he has at his will and perform consistently, keyword, on a national top level, then Baylor's always going to be known as vast underachievers.
It's really interesting, David, because you know you look at the history of Scott Drew as a coach, and mm-hmm. he's got first off, if you want to feel old, he's been at Baylor now for 10 years. He started there in 2003-2004. So actually, this is going into his 11th season. You want to guess how many tournaments he's made in that time period? How many NCAA tournaments, I mean?
I don't think I have to guess. It's three, isn't it?
It is. It is three in that entire time. Now,
yes.
Now there's excuses for the first 4 years, obviously.
Yeah. How many tournaments had Baylor been? But it's the only three they've been to since 1942 or whatever it was. I mean, or 1960. There was a 50-year gap where they didn't make the tournament. Is that right?
There was a long period of time, and I understand that. But I think it's interesting to note that, you know, once you get clear of the sanctions, they go to the tournament in 2008, and every year they've been in the tournament, then out of the tournament, then back mm-hmm. in the tournament the next year, then out of it again the next year. I think it's one thing to say, well, Baylor hasn't been successful historically. That's true, but these things do change. And the talent that Scott Drew has brought in to this Baylor squad over the course of the last six or seven seasons is – you know, if you get out of the Kansas-Kentucky strata, you get down to that second level, it's really been unparalleled. I mean, just a tremendous amount of talent having gone through Waco over the last 7 years. And yet, the defensive effort has not been good. I mean, they've yet to rank higher than 45th in that seven-year span in defensive efficiency. You know, they've been, you know, as seated highly as three on two separate occasions. Yet they just don't seem to be able to put it all together. What do you make as the reason why?
Well, I mean, I guess it's just, I mean, you say they haven't put it together. They've been the two, I mean, they've been oscillating between the Elite Eight and then the NIT, which is kind of strange to go from the Elite Eight to the NIT to the Elite Eight to the NIT. So they're due to make the Elite Eight again. I just don't think you can go that far that, I mean, you can't be seated third, go that far and say you didn't bring it together. Now, I realize, as Hank pointed out, that this last time around, the bracket collapsed in a big way. They ended up facing, you know, a Xavier team that barely made the tournament. I don't remember a Colorado team that would not have gotten in without the automatic bid, and whoever it was they played in the opening round, I forget. But so they managed to get there against essentially very weak competition, but still – I wouldn't say that they've never maybe they've never reached their ceiling, but I wouldn't call two Elite Eights in 3 years a complete travesty for a program that had not even been there in 60 years or whatever, 50 years.
I'm not calling it a travesty. And look, I think two Elite Eights in three seasons is impressive regardless, but what the point I'm trying to make is we're looking at this Baylor team as – you know, potentially a player for the Big 12 championship. We're looking at them as a team that, you know, is obviously a player nationally on the recruiting scene. And yet, the lack of consistency from year to year with this Baylor squad, I find very, very puzzling. And so, they've managed to put it together to a certain degree in the 2 years that you talked about. But if you look at the rest of the resume, it seems like a very boom or bust cycle. And I think what we've found in most places in this day and age in college basketball, at the very least, is that you're going to have trouble surviving, you know, or being taken seriously if you're constantly in the tournament and doing well, and then suddenly you're out of the tournament entirely the following year, and people are like, well, wait, we thought you were a player on the national scene.
Right. I don't know why that is. I mean, I don't know why they can be so good. Last year, they looked to have everything set up to be even better, and they just missed it badly. I don't know. I think Scott Drew is somewhat responsible for it. It's got to start with him. But, yeah, it just seems like the 2 years they missed it, their talent didn't mesh for whatever reason. Right. Their defense has never been good, as you pointed that out. I mean, it's been good enough some of the time, but it's never really been a strength of theirs. And, yeah, it just doesn't – I mean, you never feel like – and I realize I was kind of defending them a little bit, but at no point, even during the Elite Eight runs, did you feel like the team was as good as it should have been or could have been.
Right, and I guess that's what I'm getting to add, is that the amount of talent on this team is really exemplary. I mean, it's really – it's a fun team to watch generally. They're very up and down athletically, although it's funny because last year was the first year that they've broken 100 in terms of team tempo. You had to go all the way back to 2008 the last time that they did that. So I find them very entertaining to watch. I find them frustrating to watch, though, because I look at that team and I say to myself, you should be doing so much more with what you have on the floor. So that said, Hank, let me throw it back to you. If you had to put a percentage chance on Baylor winning the Big 12 this year, what would you give them?
A big fat donut.
Okay.
Just I don't know. How many times have you seen a coach recruit top five nationally consistently and been this boomer bust from year to year? That's what I like bring it back to. So I just think that it's just when I look at Kansas and when I look at Oklahoma State, I see two clear teams that are better talent wise and coaching wise. So okay. I just see no chance whatsoever.
Well, I think I'll say this. I think Kansas is clearly better talent wise and coaching wise. I'm not willing to give Oklahoma State the benefit of that doubt. I think Oklahoma State's got a lot of talent. I think Baylor's got equal talent at this stage. I don't know that it's been utilized particularly well. So, you know, whatever you want to say about Scott Drew, he's done more in the tournament and with his overall talent than Travis Ford has, I think, during his time at Oklahoma State. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah, I would.
So I have a hard time at this point putting Baylor – or not putting Baylor at least equal with Oklahoma State when I'm looking at the pecking order of this conference. Let's talk about the rest of the conference. I mean, honestly, the rest of the conference isn't quite as interesting as the top three. There's a big morass of teams that'll be competing for NCAA tournament bids. David, the big story last year was probably Iowa State.
Yes.
and Kansas State. Those two teams, Iowa State because they shot a ridiculous amount of threes and made a lot of them at 44% from three last year. And then Kansas State because, you know, Bruce Weber using the players that were left for him by Frank Martin manages to, tie for the Big 12 title, which really nobody saw coming prior to that year.
Right.
Both of these teams are going to struggle a bit to get back to those marks. Which of those two do you think has the better shot at least coming close to the success they had last year?
I really like Iowa State. I mean, again, it's hard to tell entirely with them. I'm going to butcher his name, but I think is it Niang, the guy that's back?
George Niang, I believe.
Yeah,
yes.
George Niang. Okay. He's a good player. Now, I don't know. You look at their roster and their talent, there isn't much to get excited about, at least I don't typically, but you watch them play. It just seems like Iowa State hits their stride at some point in the conference season, and they're solidly in. Now, I mean, safely in. Now, they're not competing to be a top four seed or anything like that, but they're always safely in the tournament. Bruce Weber, like, he's great when he's using other coaches' players, but the less, you know, as that becomes less and less the case, the more he struggles. So I could see them having problems this year.
Well, and obviously, you know, problems because, you know, Angel Rodriguez transfers. I think there was another Kansas State player that transferred. It's a similar thing to what happened to him at Illinois.
Yeah.
He's got a recruiting class coming in that's supposedly decent. And, you know, they've got Will Spaulding on the team still. Shane Southwell's still there. Thomas Gibson looks like he's going to be a decent player. But the fact of the matter is that they won last year playing a style that you wouldn't necessarily see out of a normal Bruce Weber coached team. I mean, from a stylistic standpoint, this team played much slower last year than Weber's teams at Illinois normally did. at least the ones that we've seen most recently. They were much better offensively than most of Weber's post national championship game teams were at Illinois. And they played, I would say, worse defense overall than his Illinois teams did in terms of defensive efficiency. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that Iowa State, from the perspective of what they have to do, they've got a couple of good players on the front line. As you mentioned, Niang. They have DeAndre Kane coming in, who's a transfer from Marshall. But then they lost pretty much all their perimeter players, all the guys that were hitting all those three-pointers last year. You know, man, keep in mind, folks, this was an Iowa State team that came within one really bad blown call of beating Ohio State in the second round. You know, they wiped the floor with Notre Dame in that first round game last year, and they were in the mix. You know, in a lot of the games that we saw last season in the Big 12. I mean, they had that horrific loss versus Kansas in overtime, where they didn't get any call benefits. They lost that bizarre double overtime road game at Texas. They lost at home to Kansas in overtime. I mean, they were really close on a couple of occasions to making a big statement, and they just couldn't do it. Hank, what are your thoughts on these two teams?
I will chime in on Iowa State for a second, because I think we said all we need to say about Bruce Weber in this preview podcast. So with Iowa State, I do believe that not only are they very well coached and did Fred Hoiberg answer to his critics at all, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's gone to the NBA in the next 2-3 years, but they play a system where they shoot a lot of threes, don't really attack the basket much. That's a system that doesn't necessarily require you to have specific types of players. Any players can necessarily adapt to that system. That's why I think Iowa State will be okay, because it's not really a turnover in terms of talent and adapting that talent, because they're not going to out-recruit the Kansases and the Baylors and et cetera. So I think that Hoiberg will do a good job of kind of instilling the same system that he had as before, just doing it with different players, because it's not that hard when you have a kind of a simple system as opposed to trying to recruit five stars all the time and adapting to what they have. So I think Iowa State will be okay just because Hoiberg knows what he's doing.
I think that's fair. And I think, you know, it's interesting. They've relied on a lot of transfers, and as I mentioned, they have another one coming in. And, you know, how those pieces integrate is always kind of a curiosity as you look at the way that the teams are put together. You know, it's interesting also if you look at Iowa State's non-conference schedule, they've got some interesting games. They have Michigan on the 17th. That's going to be a really excellent test for both teams. They have to travel to BYU. They're at UNI on the December 7th. That should be fun.
Okay, I thought that one was leaving campus. That's great.
Yeah, and then they have a home game versus Iowa 6 days later. So not a completely worthless non-conference schedule like we've seen from some of the Pac-12 teams that we looked at last week. So we're going to get a sense early on with this Iowa State team, I think, about how well they're going to be able to contribute. And, you know, I think that as the schedule lays out for them, they have a really tough close to the schedule. The last three games for them, they have to go to Kansas State, they have to go to Baylor, and then they have Oklahoma State at home. So I think they're really going to have to make some hay in the early portion of the schedule if they want to be in the conversation for an NCAA tournament berth at the end.
Completely agree. I just think they're going to be there in the discussion. Now, I don't think we're going to be talking about them as a Final Four candidate, but I think they're going to be one of those teams that's 8, 9, 10 seed range. They're going to get themselves in.
That's fair enough. Last team I wanted to talk about in the Big 12, because, frankly, you get past this. Actually, there's two teams I want to talk about. We'll throw both of them in.
Two more.
One of them is Oklahoma. Oklahoma last year, a little bit of a surprise. They made the NCAA tournament. They got beaten up pretty badly in that game against San Diego State, and they lose a bunch of guys off of this team. I mean, they lose Romero Osby, and Osby was pretty much their all-everything guy. It was a top 50 player in terms of his national offensive rating. I believe they lost a Math Mbai as well. They have some players coming back. Buddy Hield looked pretty good shooting the basketball last year, in terms at least of his 2-point percentage. His 3-point percentage was pretty darn bad overall. But a lot of missing pieces on this Oklahoma team. Hank, does this squad have a chance of making another NCAA tournament run, or was that kind of their window for the short term?
I think it's their window for the short term, just because Romero Osby meant basically 75 to 80% of that team's production on both ends of the floor.
Right.
I mean, yeah, Long Kruger can recruit, but he hasn't really shown the ability to recruit the same way that he did at UNLV. So I'm not sure that they're even necessarily thinking about the top of the Big 12.
Yeah, I think that they need to be fighting for survival this year, I think, is probably the best way to put it. It's just, this is, I think, you know, you're still looking at some residual issues from, you know, what's happened with this team over the course of the past few years. I mean, Lon Kruger, you know, coming in, he's only been there for a couple of years, and, you know, in his second year he gets them to an NCAA tournament. But, man, you look at what happened to them under Jeff Capel. They went from a team that in Capel's third year was a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament to missing the tournament entirely the following 2 years, and getting, you know, they were 5 games under 500 in 2010. They were 4 games under 500 in 2011. They just got progressively worse. And I think that it's going to take a little more time for Kruger to really get this team from a talent perspective restocked,
yeah.
David.
Yeah, I agree. They're at the bottom of their talent cycle. They had if you make the NCAA tournament as an at-large caliber team, you're doing all right. But they lost I think they lost 4 starters. I don't think anybody's back. So, I mean, you don't really know much about them, and it's just going to take time for them to get experience and gel and be good. I mean, I guess the question is, can they play their way into a buy-in of the quarterfinals of the Big 10 or Big 12 tournament? I mean, will they finish outside of the bottom four?
I think the only thing that's going to save them in that regard is you have to look at the rest of the Big 12, and you have to say to yourself, I mean, because if you look down the road there, there's going to be basically, it looks like, 5 teams fighting to, you know, stay above that bottom four. TCU is going to be terrible again. I don't think there's any question of that. Texas Tech, I'm not expecting miracles out of Tubby Smith in his first year, given what he's got to work with. I think West Virginia is in a major rebuild right now. I wasn't really expecting that out of
them. That is shocking. That is astounding how quickly they got, how bad they got, and how quickly they got that bad.
Yeah, and I mean,
wow.
You look at what they did last year. They were at 1.6-6 in the conference and 13-12 overall. They lost their last 7 games in a row, including losing to Texas Tech in the first round of the Big 12 tournament. I mean, that's about as low as you can get. And they lose, I can never pronounce the guy's name, Dennis Kalichi. They lost Rutledge. They lost Humphrey. I mean, they've lost some significant pieces off of what was not a very good team to begin with.
Right, and Pitsnoggle is not walking through that door.
No, Pitsnoggle's not walking through that door. Yeah, neither is John Beilein at this stage.
Yeah.
Maybe Dan Dockich will walk through that door. It worked so well the last time for them. But no, the team I do want to talk about, though, and what we're going to wrap up here with the Big 12 on, is Texas. This has become the big question mark. A huge amount of talent has gone through this Texas program over the last few years with not a whole lot to show for it. Last year's team finished 16-18, and you know, the fact that they were able to finish 16-18 was kind of an oddity in and of itself for reasons we'll talk about on another podcast. But they lose to Chaminade in the Maui. You know, they lost to USC, who was not very good last year. They went 7-11 overall in the Big 12. And, you know, to add on to all of that, they lose Mike Kabongo. He goes to the NBA draft. They lose Sheldon McClellan, who was their top offensive player, arguably, last year. They lose Julian Lewis, who was among their top offensive players last year. They lose Ioannis Papapetro. I can never pronounce his name either. He signs a contract in Greece. He's gone. So the guys you got coming back, I guess the top player you're dealing with is Javon Felix. He had an offensive rating of 85.9 last year, which is really, really bad. Like that's not one of those offensive ratings that you want to write home to your mom about. And you know, they've got some talent coming in, obviously, but this is a Texas team that I don't think anybody's seriously picking to even contend for an NCAA tournament berth.
I am not picking them to contend for.
That's good. So David, the question I'll ask you and then Hank, is this Rick Barnes' last rodeo at Texas? I mean, is this it for him?
Well, there are good coaches, and then there are entertaining coaches, and Rick Barnes is the latter, so I sure hope not.
You want more Rick Barnes, right?
I want more.
Entertaining for what kind of value?
Well, yeah.
Schadenfreude, it's great.
That's fair. I mean, I'm always in favor of that. You know, Hank, this is a guy in Rick Barnes that prior to last season had made 14 consecutive NCAA tournaments. As recently as 3 years ago, they were a 4 seed in the tournament. They were one of the better teams efficiency-wise in the country. That was the year that they lost by a point to Arizona in the second round. But, you know, even if you factor in some of the disappointments of the, you know, the 2009 or 2010, this is still a guy that has had a tremendous amount of success. And, you know, it begs the question, is this just too much of a hiccup for him to deal with? Do people really care that much in Texas about the way that the basketball team is faring?
Well, I wonder if recruits are starting to realize the way Rick Barnes coaches in games as well. So it's not just that. I just think that when you haven't made wow, what a fantastic goal.
Yeah, I was about to say, this is an unscripted show, folks, and that was a fantastic goal.
This is what happens when you have El Clasico on in the background. That's more Neymar there, I think. But anyway, go ahead, Hank.
Yeah. But at Texas, it's kind of a go far in the tournament or bust mentality the way that Rick Barnes has recruited in years past, and to not go past the second round since 2005, 2006.
Yes.
I'm sorry. 2007, 2008, they made the Elite Eight. So it's been about 5-6 seasons since they've made any noise in the tournament. And in Texas, that's unacceptable since they hold themselves to a higher standard. I also think that this team might be the last team we see Rick Barnes coach at Texas.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the thing I'm curious about because, you know, it's funny. We were just complaining about Baylor and how Baylor always seems to underperform. I feel like Texas is Baylor's slightly more accomplished historically but just as disappointing older brother.
Yeah, I mean, there are times where Texas is more Baylor than Baylor.
Yeah. I would agree with that. And, you know, I think it's a shame. I think Barnes, for all the grief that Barnes gets, is not a bad coach. I mean, he's able to pull in a lot of recruits. Some of that is the fact that he's at Texas. But historically, you know, he was very successful at Clemson. I mean, he had a lot of success
before that.
And at Providence before that, he had a lot of success at Texas. You know, they've been, you know, over the course of from 2003 to 2008. They were seeded first, third, eighth, second, fourth, second. I mean, that's a team that's a major player on the national scene, absolutely. You know, but some things just stop working after a while, and I think we might be at that point with Texas. I really have no clue what to expect out of this team this year. But I know that with the amount of things that they lost off of last year's team and the struggles that that team had by itself, I think that Texas is going to be hard-pressed to get out of the basement or the bottom four of the Big 12 this season. Anyway, so let me get to a quick pick, guys. Let me do two questions here for you. One, who's your pick to win the Big 12 title regular season? And two, how many teams does the Big 12 get into the NCAA tournament? Hank, let me start with you.
All right. Let me see. I like Kansas to win the Big 12. I just think that come March, February, that they're just going to be on another level, even with Oklahoma State. I just think that they're going to be that much better and be one of the main contenders for a national title. I think Kansas, Oklahoma State, Baylor, and Iowa State will definitively make the tournament. I don't know if I could go any more than that.
He's reading my notes. He's looking over here, and he's reading my notes.
I don't think Kansas State has the talent this year to make the tournament. I think you only get 4 teams this year. And one other prediction I'll make this year is that the most appealing head coaching vacancy at the end of the year will come out of this conference, and Texas will become that vacancy.
Yes. Wow. I mean, if they get rid of Rick Barnes, and that's another thing. I mean, is happening of a place as Waco, Texas is, all of you have been to Austin, correct? How are they not winning national championships and everything every year?
I mean, the size
of that athletic department, the type of town it is, the resources, the quality of high school ball in Texas, they should be better than what they are.
I don't know if I've – and it's funny because I hear that all the time, and on paper it makes sense. But it's like saying, how is it that Miami isn't winning national championships in football every year? Or,
I don't know how they're not. I really don't know why Coastal Carolina's not either.
Exactly. I think that there's a lot more that goes into it than just the location of the school or even the effort of the athletic department. Because I think if you look at the Texas athletic department, their focus is football. And – as we see with a lot of, football-first schools, their basketball programs don't do very well. And we see the inverse, or the opposite, I guess, with basketball-first programs. I mean, if you look at the historical lack of success that Indiana football, Kansas football, Kentucky football, UCLA football's had a little more success, but they've always been a little bit of the golden-headed stepchild of USC. So, I think that just because you've got a $150 million budget doesn't mean you're really going to be successful in both programs unless you really commit to it. And that's why I applaud Ohio State, I applaud Florida, because these are schools that have big athletic budgets and manage to turn those around into successful programs on both sides of the equation.
Well, what is Texas's basketball? I mean, Texas basketball has a lot of nice stuff. Texas softball has a lot of nice stuff. Yeah. I mean, you're treated well at Texas if you're doing anything in athletics there.
I think it's more institutional buy-in more than anything else. And I think it's oversight. With the football program, you've got state politicians in Texas calling regularly and asking why they went for it on third and short. Or fourth and short. Basketball, it's kind of like, okay, Rick Barnes is coaching. Hey, we're in the tournament a bunch of times. That must be awesome, right? I don't think it's one of those situations where people care as much, and that shines through in the fact that even though they've had a lot of talent and they've had some seeding success, they really haven't had tournament success.
I think we could see something along the lines of, in Texas, it's obviously a football-first school, but I think we could see some kind of political kind of, I can't think of the word, but kind of focusing off the football issues by the athletic department focusing on the basketball issues, that kind of thing. So I think you could see with all this uproar about Mack Brown in Texas, the athletic department might shift their attention and say, look, we're going to do some change with the basketball department because they don't want to fire a guy like that. So I could see some kind of like political kind of stance by saying like let's focus on basketball so that nobody's really focusing on football for the time being.
Yeah, I don't see that happening because I don't think people have it in their DNA to not focus on football in the state of Texas, particularly in Austin, right, where that is it is such an important part of the everyday, for at least as far as students and alumni are concerned. I mean, there's a whole section of Austin that doesn't give a crap about Texas football, but that's another story. Anyway, David, did you have any – I still need your championship pick and your tournament picks.
Same as Hank, and okay. I realize that that's great radio when we all get on here and agree with each other. But, yeah, I think Kansas will win the league. I have questions, but, I mean, I still like them better than anyone else. And I think Baylor Iowa State and Oklahoma State are going to be solidly in the field, some more solidly than others. I like this Oklahoma State team, though. I think they have a lot of potential.
I'm also going to go with Kansas as my pick for this conference. Sorry if that's boring, but reality is often boring. I do think Kansas State manages to sneak in at the very bottom areas of the bubble. I think that they'll win.
Or
no, I think they'll get into the NCAA. I also agree with you that Iowa State and Oklahoma State and Baylor will be in the tournament as well. So I just think it seems logical to be looking at things and say, well, Kansas State, they're going to maybe finish 500 in conference. But I think 500 in conference will be more than enough to get them into the NCAA tournament because the bottom of the bubble is going to be that weak this year. Right. I think it's going to be a very top-heavy college football season. Anyway, that's going to wrap up our Big 12 preview. Thanks to all you folks for tuning in and watching. We're going to be back different URL, but same bat channel here as we preview the Mountain West Conference. So I'm going to be tweeting that out on Hoops HD's Twitter feed, so be sure to watch out for it there. We'll be starting up in about 5 minutes, so don't go anywhere. For Hank Glassner and David Griggs, I'm Galen Clavio. Thanks for joining us on this Hoops HD Conference Preview, the Big 12 edition. We'll catch you on the flip side. So long, everybody.